The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Mark. As Jesus was passing through a field of grain on the Sabbath, his disciples began to make a path while picking the heads of grain. At this, the Pharisees said to him, "Look, why are they doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath?" He said to them, "Have you never read what David did when he was in need and his companions were hungry? How he went into the house of God when Abiathar was high priest and ate the bread of offering that only the priest could lawfully eat and shared it with his companions?" Then he said to them, "The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. That is why the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath." The Gospel of the Lord. Good, so once again, good morning, brothers and sisters. What I thought I would do with you here this morning, talk to you a little bit about our first reading from the book of the prophet Samuel, because it tells us one of the most momentous events in all the Bible, namely the selection of King David as the king of Israel. So I want you to consider something today. David had no claim to be king. He was a nobody from a family of nobodies. David had no pedigree. David had no genealogy. David had no ancestry. David wasn't even the eldest. He wasn't even the firstborn. David was the youngest of the sons of Jesse. He had no military heritage. He had no royal heritage. He had no priestly heritage. Nothing. David had no claim whatsoever to be king. And that is why God chose David. Now, not that you could ever divine all the reasons why God does anything that God does, but you know what? That's among the biggest reasons why God chose David. Jesus would use the exact same selection criteria when he chose his apostles, picking complete nobodies off the shore of the Sea of Galilee, a ragtag assemblage of tax collectors and fishermen and misplaced activists, and raising them up to the highest dignity that he would ever give to anybody in all the church. The entire work of salvation that Jesus accomplished on the cross, he would place that on the shoulders of his apostles. And history would go on to recall and recount these apostles as being greater and more noble than the greatest kings who've ever lived. But by strictly worldly standards, they were nobodies. So here's the question for you. Why? Why does God choose nobodies like the apostles and like King David? To show that the glory goes to him. To show that it's God's work and not man's. You see, if God had chosen a mighty warrior to take on powerful Goliath, oh, the glory would have gone to the mighty warrior. And if God had chosen somebody from a great noble family to become the great king of Israel in the beginning of this great dynasty, all the glory would have gone to the family. But by choosing who the world thinks is nothing, to reduce to nothing those who think they're something, God shows that the glory belongs to him alone. It's like what Samuel said in the first reading. Man looks to the appearance, but God looks to the heart. Page through the Old Testament, and you will find everyone expecting the Messiah to be a great king like David. Prophet Daniel said, he's going to be greater than the kings of Babylon. He's going to be greater than the kings of Persia. Nobody expected him to be a carpenter from Nazareth. Nobody saw that one coming. Right? Picking heads of grain off grain stalks as if he were violating the Sabbath, when in fact he's the Lord of the Sabbath. He would go on to defeat the power of evil, no less. But he wouldn't do it by any worldly means. He wouldn't do it by swinging a sword. He wouldn't do it by leading an army, galloping on horseback. He would rather do it by bleeding on the cross, taking what the world considers to be the greatest loss and the greatest humiliation, and turning it into the most noble victory to remind you that God's ways are not your own. Now, how about you? How about you? How does this affect you? This affects you by reminding you that God doesn't need your strength. God doesn't need your skills. God only needs your faithfulness. He doesn't even need your moral perfection. Look at King David, right? Look at King David. Great king, right? Nobody's going to deny that. Do you ever forget David was a murderer and an adulterer? Very flawed instrument, but look what God did with him. Or how about St. Peter? Great pope, great evangelizer, denied Christ 3 times. See, you think that God can't use you unless you're skilled or unless you're morally flawless, but this is not true. You want to know why God writes straight on crooked lines? Because there are no straight lines. Because there are no straight lines. Our job is not to focus on our skills or abilities, useful though they are. Don't get me wrong. I don't mean to reduce them to zero. It's just that grace can do more. And compared with God, what God can do with you by the power of his grace, anything he can do with you by the power of your mere human skill, it's like an anthill. So what do? We focus on our faithfulness. This is why I love this quotation from Mother Teresa of Calcutta. She said, we're not called to be successful. We're called to be faithful. And no matter how things might appear, and no matter how dark the world might be, keep your eyes on the Lord, who is always at work. And strive now to place your hope not in yourself, but place your hope in him, because those who hope in him are never going to hope in vain. Amen.